Hello and thank you for joining us for this week's edition of The Front Page. We have an absolutely packed show coming up. We'll be talking about the blizzard of international action at the Breeders' Cup. We'll be looking ahead to the race that stops a nation in Australia. We'll be talking about the return to the training ranks of Henrietta Knight and lots more on top of that. Joining me to discuss all of that in the studio, Matt Rennie. How are you, Matt?
I'm really, really good. Pleasure to be here again and lots to discuss. Obviously, a brilliant action in America at Santa Anita and a lot of talking points domestically as well.
Absolutely. And joining us on video link from Ireland, David DJ Jennings. David, it was your birthday last week. Happy birthday, first of all. How did you celebrate?
Thanks. How did I celebrate? I celebrated a couple of days. I actually did well. Last year, when it was my birthday, we were unlucky. Our little fellow was in hospital for a while, so I got no kind of meal. I got no night out. I got nothing. So this year, they've actually made up for it. IFA was quite good. We're out for dinner on Friday night, and then my parents brought us out for dinner on Sunday. So the moral of that story is I'm getting fatter, I'd say, because I've been out for two dinners in 48 hours.
Well, you and me both, DJ. I just moved house, so it's delivery all the way. But people aren't here to hear about our eating habits. They're here to hear about racing. And if you love your racing, you will want to know that Upping the Ante is back tomorrow, Tuesday. It'll be live on the Racing Post YouTube channel at 6 p.m. DJ, how are you looking forward to it?
I am looking forward to it a lot. An hour with Johnny Deline. Well, it's actually usually 2 hours. 2 hours with Johnny Deline. Talking to him before we go on the show, then going on the show, and then dissecting the show afterwards is quite an experience. He's just one of these people that's just, when you're around him, you're just kind of half in awe of him, and you just can't stop laughing. So really looking forward to it. Great to have him back. Great to have the show back. And it makes that, I suppose, that countdown to Cheltenham go that little bit better. Plenty of new things planned. It's a brand new series. It's a brand new look show. So it's not going to go stale. We're not going to have exactly the same show as we had last year. We've got new features in it. We've got new ideas. We have new tipping from Johnny as well. So plenty to look forward to. I'm hoping people will be pleasantly surprised, Tom.
Brilliant. I can't wait for it. Tune in tomorrow, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Upping the Ante with David Jennings and Johnny Deline. Okay, we're going to get straight into our first talking point, and we're reflecting on the World Championships Breeders' Cup weekend at Santa Anita. What an absolute feast of racing we had. Let's start with that man, Frankie Dettori. What a weekend he had. That brilliant win on the Spiral. What did you think of it, DJ?
I thought it was... That was Frankie. Like, if you were to do a highlights reel of his career, I think the riding in Spiral, because of the timing, I suppose, because it came so late in his career, but it was up there with one of his great Breeders' Cup rides. And I know, like, over the years, he's been criticised for some of his Breeders' Cup rides, including the likes of Swain over the years. But I thought on Inspiral, like, he did what he had to do. He had to ride Inspiral in that manner. But just for it to unfold in the way it did, to be where he was in the home turn, for his main market rival, Warm Heart, to get such a beautiful trip. Like, Ryan Moore was riding absolutely... We'll talk about Augusto then later in the show, but he rode beautifully all weekend. For Warm Heart to get the perfect toe into the race, then for the gap to come, everything went right for Warm Heart. And I think if you back Warm Heart, you're kind of saying to yourself, how on earth did we get beaten there? But it was just a filly who was at the top of her game, ridden by a man at the top of his game. And do you know what? It's funny, Tom, I've completely changed my mind on this. I was kind of, for a few months there, I was like, I'm sick of this Frankie nonsense. Will you just go? Like, it's going on forever. Like, why do you not just do a Davy Russell or a Barry Geraghty or a Ruby Walsh and just end it on the spot? Let's just go. And the longer it's going on, the more I'm kind of going, God, I'm actually going to really miss him now, and the sport is going to miss him, and I'm kind of glad he's going on for a bit longer, and I hope he's at Royal Ascot next season. So I've turned full circle, to be honest with you, Tom.
There's absolutely no doubt. I'm calling it now. Frankie Dettori will be at Royal Ascot. I'm absolutely sure of it. And he'll be coming up against that man, Ryan Moore, again. You alluded to the ride on Auguste Rodin in the turf. I mean, similar in a sense, in that it was a ride of genius and daring, but he did it a very different way. What did you make of that ride by Moore? And if you were to compare and contrast the two rides, which would you have on top?
Probably Auguste Rodin I would have on top of Frankie's ride, because Frankie was, like it was a flawless ride from Frankie, and he did what he had to do, and that was always the way she was going to be ridden. She was never going to be prominent. I think with Augusto then, I think Ryan spoke about this after the race, and so did Michael Tabor. It was never the plan to be that far back. It was a messy turn when they come onto the main track. It was messy. The whole first half of the race was really messy, and then he ended up where he was. But I think it's a real sign of what confidence is in a jockey. I'm a firm believer in sport in general. Confidence is not being afraid to make mistakes, and that's what Ryan Moore wasn't afraid to do. He wasn't afraid to make a mistake. He went down the inside, which he said himself wasn't plan A or B. He didn't plan to be so far back, but he can kind of do that because he's had such a good season, because he's riding so well, and it's a case of, right, let's try this, and if it goes well, great. If it doesn't, look, I'll take the consequences. It's on me if this horse gets beaten by going this route, and that's what he did. I think he played the brave man's route, and he got rewarded spectacularly. Now, not even he could have imagined the way it panned out, the way it would open up the inside. But you kind of get rewarded for bravery in this game. And that's what he did. He didn't ride. I always get this saying mixed up, right? He didn't ride to lose the race. He rode to win the race. No, sorry. He didn't ride not to lose the race. He rode to win the race. I knew I'd mess that up. I always mess that up. So he didn't ride not to lose the race. He rode to win the race. And that means taking chances. He took the chance. He got rewarded. It was a brilliant ride, and obviously there was a sting in the tail with the whip ban because he went one over and he got a fine. But I suppose it's not too bad. I'm sure he would have taken it before the race.
Getting those fractional calls right is what marks out the very best, and there's arguably no one in the world better at it than Ryan Moore. We've got to look at some of the other winners as well. There was perhaps none more popular than Big Evs for Mick Appleby. And you may have seen this clip that went viral on social media. We'll play it here. It's just fantastic. It just highlights what these winners mean to the people connected, particularly at the smaller yards.
Outside, and Asian is the trailer, so the fastest of all is the filly Crimson Advocate. The Big Evs is right on the outside, and the two of them are matching strides on the lead.
Matt, what a clip. What a fantastic clip. I mean, I love everything about it. I love the sort of the emotional roller coaster. I love the slightly confused Labrador wandering through the front shot. It's just a great clip, isn't it?
It's fantastic. And it's what I think the Big Ev story has brought to the flat season. You've got to remember, he's only two as well. And we've had so much roller coaster of emotion with his season, you know, winning at Royal Ascot, winning at Goodwood. I think people have forgot he was beaten quite comprehensively in an Unthorpe Stakes, and when the connection bravely took the route as a juvenile to go take on the elders, roared back at Doncaster and went and did what he did at the Breeders' Cup. It's a marvellous story, and it's what the sprinting division, particularly in British flat horse racing, has brought to us this season. Obviously, Living the Dream didn't win at Santa Anita, yeah, but it was still a wonderful story. And it's great that we're going to have these two wonderful stories going into next year as well. I said to someone afterwards, it was almost like if Highfield Princess retires at the end of the season, we don't know what's going on with her career. She's been brilliant and the public horse for the sprinting division. It's almost like there's an heir apparent in Big Evs. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with him next season. He looks like an out-and-out 5 furlong horse to me. So I'd be going down the King's Stand Stakes route and then all the way back to the, almost working back from the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar next year. But just to have that human connection going into the flat season for next year is brilliant. You know, yeah, the flat season, sometimes we get to the end of a season, a three-year-old might be retired, and Ace Impact's already been gone off to stud, yeah, after winning, yeah, the Arc. But now we have a real human element that we might not see that often in the flat, and we more often see in jumps, to bring over the winter. And it's really exciting going beyond, but it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and they're fantastic stories, and you meant to live in the dream. Obviously, unfortunately, couldn't do it for Adam West, although so exciting to see him absolutely nailing the start, blitzing to the front, and you just thought, go on. But on just in the last sort of 100, 200 yards, just got mown down. But what a story that was. You know, one of the things that I thought was so fantastic from that is just how down-to-earth the connections were, how delighted, how obviously thrilled they were to be there. As you say, flat racing can be about these huge monster operations. So brilliant to see two smaller yards there on the bigger stage and just having a marvelous time. Their connections clearly loving it. What a great advert for the sport.
It's really good. And to have that sort of people and that horse that are so relatable to the common public can only benefit the sport as a whole, really, in bringing in maybe even new fans. There might have been people from South West London or Epsom that had never heard of Living the Dream 2 or 3 months ago, but now they know he's a Group 1 winner on the international stage and we're taking on the Americans in their own backyard. It's really good for that. And obviously the human elements as well. You've got to go out to Mick Appleby, brilliant training performance with Big Evs to get that really, really big winner. You know, everyone knows Mick's a very good trainer, but he might have been wrongly stereotyped as a trainer for the all-weather recently, but he's proven he's a fantastic horseman, and he's a Grade 1 winner, or top-level winning trainer now. And I thought it was a brilliant ride for Tom Marcon as well. Obviously, he did so well in Australia, but he's just proven that he can do it on a wider international stage now as well.
DJ, we had a little bit of controversy as well in the run-up to the meeting, where we had two horses withdrawn on vet's advice, Give Me the Beat Boys and River Tiber. Tell us a little bit about that. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it's like, you have to, I know, like, people will argue, you know, these people have huge sums of money, but like, to go to America with horses and plan a Breeders' Cup raid, it just doesn't happen like that. Like, it takes a lot of time and effort and planning and money, and to get over there and do everything right, and then for you to think your horse is perfectly sound to run, and then to be told that horse cannot run, it must be absolutely demoralizing. And I thought both Jessica Harrington and Aidan O'Brien were brilliant in defeat, basically, because they were told that River Tiber, who Aidan, now the vibes going into the middle park weren't actually that strong about River Tiber, but they were really strong going into the Breeders' Cup juvenile turf. And you know, Ryan picked River Tiber over Unquestionable, who was coming in on the back of a better run. They were ready for that horse to run potentially the best race of his season so far. He obviously was taken out. The Give Me the Beat Boys one was the one we got most access to, because you could see Kate Harrington leading the horse up with like mats and dust and straw, and then there was concrete. And it was just like, I'm no vet, and thankfully for everybody out there, I'm not a vet. But I was watching it going, this is unbelievable. Like, how can a horse be withdrawn on this evidence? Now, obviously the horse would have been poked and felt and all these different things, and these people know far more than me. But from the video clip we saw with Kate Harrington trotting the horse up along, it just seemed like the ground was so uneven. It seemed like it was almost as if this couldn't be it. This couldn't be the actual moment where the horse was taken out. But it was. And I don't know. I just think the whole thing is bizarre. And it will, like Jessica said, she spoke afterwards. And like, she wasn't vexed and she wasn't, you know, she was quite calm, I thought. But she did say it would kind of put her off going back there again, because you've always got in the back of your head, is this horse actually going to run? And it's the same with the horses going to Melbourne as well. Like, there's a big chance that these horses are not going to clear the vet's examination. So it is something, obviously, we have to look for the safety of the horses, and that's the most important thing going forward. But I just thought the Give Me the Beat Boys thing, watching that video on social media, was just utterly bizarre. I don't know what you thought.
Well, I suppose a contest, I agree with you, it didn't look particularly thorough, I guess. I mean, I'm sure it was thorough, but it didn't look like it was optimally done. But I suppose the context is that racing in America, particularly racing in California, same as racing in Australia, and particularly the Melbourne Cup meeting, you know, they're under a huge amount of pressure from sort of domestic animal rights groups, from media attention. And in America particularly, you know, they've had these recurring cycles of spates, of fatalities at these big tracks. Some of them have shut down for periods. So I do understand why they exercise this safety first approach, but it certainly is leading to, you know, disappointed connections who are finding that their runners have been ruled out of meetings that they think they are okay to run in. And it will undoubtedly.
The one thing I would say, Tom, traveling. The one thing I would say, just to interrupt you, the one thing I would say is, if it is that important, and if we need to get this right, and if this thing is going forward where these tests are going to be scrutinized and you know, a safety first approach is going to be adopted, then it has to be the case that when international raiders arrive at these venues, that the vet that is checking the horse on the first day is the vet that checks the horse the last day, and is the vet that checks the horse every step of the way. Because if a horse arrives on Monday, by the following Saturday week, if another set of eyes has been looked at this horse, and the original vet probably potentially saw things in a horse, and as Aidan O'Brien always says, horses are so different, the way they move, the way they do everything, and they're different little quirks. So I think it's only fair that if these checks are being made every single day for these international raiders, surely the vet that stops the horse from running at the end should be the vet that has seen the horse in the first place. I think there has to be some kind of continuation from the vet side of things. I don't think, and I think that upset a few people over there, that potentially the vet that saw Gimme the Beat Boys wasn't the vet that had been checking Gimme the Beat Boys all along.
DJ, just quickly before we get off the international racing beat, let's look ahead to the Melbourne Cup. Of course, if you're watching this show after 4 a.m. on Tuesday, you'll know the result already. But I think it's fair to say the confidence levels behind Vauban are extraordinarily high.
They are indeed. I can never, like, I was down there in 2017 for Rekindling, and I was really excited that year, but I can't remember being so excited for a Melbourne Cup. We have got a horse here that we all know and love. Like, we've followed this horse the whole way along, from his Triumph Hurdle win to running against Stateman to running against Constitution Hill, and we've got a horse now that potentially could win a Melbourne Cup. And speaking to David Casey, I've been in good contact with David down there, and speaking to Willie Mullins, I'm doing his stable tour for the Racing Post on Monday week. So I've been in contact with him quite a bit. I should say Monday, not Monday week, because today is Monday. So next Monday, Willie Mullins stable tour in the Racing Post. I've been in consultation with him quite a good bit, and it just seems to be that everything has kind of almost gone too well. It's like there hasn't been a single setback. Everything has gone exactly the way they wanted. And I penned a column on this on Saturday in the Racing Post. I think he's the one horse that it's been the plan for ages for. Whereas with the likes of Max Dynamite, with Thomas Hobson, with the different horses, Willie has had six different runners in the race, eight different times they've ran in the race because two of them ran twice. I think this is the one horse where it's been plan A all along for the last 2 years. He's now a battle-hardened, proper grade one hurdler. And I think he's good enough to win the Melbourne Cup.
Well, we'll find out if you are correct and if you are betting on the Melbourne Cup. In fact, if you're just looking at any race cards, you must check out the Racing Post's latest app update. We've completely overhauled our race cards. You can take a look at them right here.
You spoke, we listened. Introducing Race Cards Redefined. 3 brand new and unique race cards tailored for your needs. Our new and improved standard race card is the punter's favourite and is everything you need to make your selection. Get the maximum amount of information in the palm of your hand with Expert View. Cover all areas and get all the same information as our newspaper. With Compact View, you can make a quick decision on who to back. View more runners and more odds on one race. Which race card will you choose?
Welcome back. We're going to move on to some domestic matters, and we had some fascinating news today, this morning, that Henrietta Knight is going to return to the training ranks. 77 years young, 11 years out, but the trainer of Best Mate is back. Matt.
I think it's brilliant news. I think it's absolutely brilliant news, especially in the current climate. We've seen loads of trainers, especially on the flat. We obviously just had William Jarvis saddle his final runner. Obviously, him and Henrietta Knight are the elder statesmen and women of the division. So it's really good that we're having another brilliant trainer back in the ranks. And I'm sure a lot of our older viewers will be loving her coming back. Obviously, fond memories of Best Mate, Edredon Bleu. My memories of Henrietta Knight was training Summersby to beat Finian's Rainbow in the Victor Chandler Chase then. And I think that might have been in her final season before she handed in the licence first time round. But it's brilliant. And in a sense, it is a shock, but not a shock, because we all know she's not been out of the game completely. She's had she has a really strong operation in West Lockings pre-training and jumping. And I think it was in the story today, loads of trainers from all over the country send her horses for schooling purposes. Yeah. She's obviously been a racing manager and buying expensive purchases for the late Michael Gretsch, so she's not been totally out of the game, and it's really good to have her back in the game. It's all the better for having the game, and imagine if she does eventually get another winner at the Cheltenham Festival, it'd be a very, very popular success.
Certainly would. I think it's fair to say, although she retired from training, she has not been far away from racing at all. In fact, she's been as busy as buying horses, helping trainers all across the country. Mm. I mean, she absolutely lives the game. She loves it. So she expects to be back after Christmas.
January the 1st, I believe. So straight into the new year and straight up and running. Obviously, she's got Brendan Powell coming in as the assistant as well. Obviously, he had a really successful stint with Joseph O'Brien. He's just more recently been with Rebecca Menzies, a trainer in his own right, previously as well. So he knows the game in and out. So it'll be a very strong combination to keep an eye on going into the new year. And it's just, I think it is really, really good news. There's a bit of positivity when in a way where a lot of trainers have been leaving the game, and it's really sad to see trainers leave the game when it's not economically viable. So it's always good to have that plus on that side.
25 to 30 horses she's hoping to have in training. I dare say she's not going to have any trouble filling those numbers. DJ, would you have a horse with Henrietta?
I would. I was MC at the Cheltenham preview night in Navan last March or February, and she was over for it. And somebody said to me, "Oh, you know, Henrietta Knight is in the crowd. You should get her up to interview her." So, of course, I did. And I said, "Henrietta, would you come up and have a few words with me?" So she came up, right? And I'm so embarrassed. Like, I treated her as though, like, she was this, like, old lady that, like, has been out of the game and she hadn't a clue what's going on. Like, so I was asking her, like, questions like she was, like, my little Georgia, who's a three-year-old. Like, so the first question was, like, about, like, maybe galloping the Champs and the Gold Cup or something. And as she was answering the question, I was like, what am I doing here? She is absolutely tuned in, knows what's going on. And we had about a 15-minute chat. She knew the form lines inside out. She knew the breeding of the horses. She knew, like, you know, different points that they had won over the years when they were younger horses. I was shocked at her knowledge. And she made me look like an absolute lemon, so she did. So she knows what's going on. She is in that form book day in, day out. She's been over to Ireland. She's been to Gordon Elliott's. She's been to Willie's. She's been to different places. And she is tuned in, let me tell you. So when she does return, I don't think there's going to be any settling in period. I think she's going to return with a bang, and she's going to have some nice horses that probably came from point-to-point fields as well. So it's exciting. It's great for the game. She always adds a bit of something to it. I don't know, even over the years, even when I was young and she had Best Mate and the likes, it just edged on blood. Like, it just, she adds something to the game that nobody else can, and her passion for it is great. So I hope she does well anyway, Tom.
Yeah, well, I hope they didn't catch that interview on film, DJ. Or introduce you as a Racing Post journalist, frankly. Apologies, Henrietta. Oh, dear God. James Doyle as well, another big name in the news over the last week. He is moving, after 9 years with Sheikh Mohammed's Godolphin, to the rising power of Watnan Racing. Of course, Watnan Racing being the name for the Emir of Qatar's racing operation. They've had plenty of success this year, snapped up a big name jockey, but certainly caught the eye, this move from the Godolphin operation of Dubai's Sheikh Mohammed to Watnan Racing of the Emir of Qatar. What do we make of it, Matt?
Yeah, well, it's almost transfer season. It's like the transfer window has opened, really, with the flat season. Now's the time when you see these jockeys go on the merry-go-round of where the retained ownership's coming next time round, and it's a huge name to start it off with, and I think it's a brilliant move as well. So James Doyle obviously leaving Godolphin after 9 years, classic success with Caribus in the 2022-2000 Guineas, and plenty of success for Charlie Appleby and Godolphin. I think it's, like I said, I think it is the perfect move at his time of his career now. He's 35, he's in the prime of his career, he's going to be in the prime of his career for the next, you know, 5, maybe 10 years, and he's joining up with an operation who, that you might call them a boutique operation now, but the way they've spent and came onto the into the scene with a bang last season with Karaj, Mon Ami and Gregory. They've obviously bought Rogue Lightning for, I think it was a million guineas at the Ascot sale on Champions Day. So they're going to be a force that's just going to keep building and building and building. And James's portfolio with them going starting early next year and build will just build with it as well. You know, wouldn't be surprised if they buy a leading 2,000 guineas, hope it might emerge and go into training. And I think James, obviously, he's second jockey to Charlie Appleby and behind William Buick, his great friend. And it is the right time. I think it is a shock, but I think what sort of set the motions in that you thought it might happen was James riding Diego Velasquez in the Futurity Trophy. Yeah. You know, it's obviously been a very amicable split, but he was called up to ride the leading hope for Godolphin's rival Operation Coolmore in a Group 1 race. It sort of feels then, you know, it's you're not going to be with Godolphin that much longer.
Tiny little echo of Frankie Dettori's split back in the day, wasn't it?
Maybe not as acrimonious as that.
Not quite, no.
James has already shown for Coolmore this year how brilliant he is at riding with his two Group 1 wins in the Yorkshire Oaks and Prevamaille on Warm Heart. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant partnership he's going to have with Wathnon, because it also gives him the opportunity. He spoke to our colleague Maddie about he might be tempted to go for the Jockeys' Championship. The size of Wathnon at the minute would allow him to go and not only maybe ride other leading Group 1 hopes as plum spare rides, but also go and choose where he wants to ride winners at, rather than waiting for William Buick to decide where he'd ride for Godolphin. I think it's a fabulous move at the time of his career. I'm fascinated to see how it's going to go with him and Wathnon next year. Yeah. They are just a rising force, and they can be a really powerful duo together.
Well, let's contextualise this, of course, because, you know, we're talking about the 43-year-old billionaire ruler of Qatar. Mm. Now, obviously not without controversy, Qatar's involvement in international sport. They obviously had the World Cup, and they have been investing widely in lots of different sports. But, I mean, it's hard to overstate just how big it could be if the Emir of Qatar does decide that he wants to really go into racing in a big way, which some of the moves over the last 12 months certainly suggests they're moving towards. I mean, this is one of the richest and most powerful men in the Middle East, and we all know how hugely influential Sheikh Mohammed in Dubai has been. Now, nobody's suggesting right now that the Emir of Qatar's involvement is going to be on that scale. But he certainly has the means, if he desires to be a huge player in the sport, to become one.
Absolutely huge player. And it could turn out in a few years' time, we're looking at United Arab Emirates, where Godolphin was founded from, versus Qatar in a lot of our top contests. Obviously, it's interesting that Sheikh Tamim's come into the British game, just as when we've seen Qatar Racing, run by Sheikh Fahad Al Thani, has a lot of horses in America now, and Sheikh Johannes Al Thani's Al Shikab Racing put a lot of emphasis on the French racing. So it's almost like there's a nice dynamic there. Wathnam will have the British, best of the British hopes, even though they've got a lot of good French runners as well. Jasna Secret running the Chiefly Park Stakes. And it could become that a Middle East sort of power battle that emerges in British racing to come. I think as well, what also made James' decision slightly easier, obviously, Charlie Appleby and Godolphin, it's been well publicised. It's not been a great season at all as a whole. Obviously, Ancient Wisdom has emerged, winning the Futurity Trophy as a classic contender next year, and Master of the Seas won the Breeders' Cup Mile. But off the top of your head, they would be your flag bearers next year. And given Master of the Seas is an older horse and Ancient Wisdom is the leading classic colt, William Buick would ride both of them. Behind that, where James would be riding in terms of quality, probably wouldn't be up there as what he has been used to in the past with Godolphin, with the likes of Coroebus. So it just all feels everything has fallen into the place at the right time. And at this very early stage, it's not giving the vibe that it would be a job that's going to be a merry-go-round like we've seen with other owners in the game recently.
It'll be a fascinating story to follow next flat season. We'll be back for more chat in just a second. Check out our latest offer for Members Club Ultimate first. Welcome back. Our final story, we are going to look at the petition which has been launched against affordability checks. It was launched last week by Jockey Club Chief Executive Nevin Truesdale, and it has rapidly become the most popular petition on the British government's petitions website. It's passed 65,000 signatures so far. If it gets to 100,000, it will be considered for a debate in Parliament. And a raft of racing and punting figures have come forward to back the petition and to urge those working in the sport or those who are affected by affordability checks to add their name to the signature. It's got a huge amount of momentum, a huge amount of backing, and it certainly looks like it is steaming towards that 100,000 target. Matt, the significance of that 100,000 is twofold. Obviously, potentially that debate, but it's also about the message it sends, and particularly the message it sends to government and to politicians.
Yeah, and it's so integral that we get to that six-figure number. I don't think that can be understated as much as it's been overstated completely, and rightly so. We need to show the government that these checks are ludicrous, they are draconian, and they're too intrusive. And by getting to that 100,000 marker, we are showing them this is a really serious matter. I know racing, it's a great sport as it is, can be really divisive on many occasions. So to see everyone unite together against these affordability checks just shows you how seriously concerning the cause is. And it would be so good to get it to 100,000 because it really would put the pressure on the government to consider that debate. And I think it'd be really integral as well to get those the areas where the training centres are, Moulton, Newmarket. You've got Middleham, obviously Middleham falls into Rishi Sunak's constituency up in North Yorkshire. It'd be so integral if they can show the force as well. It should be a call out to anyone within a trainer's yard. You think that could be hundreds of signatures added within minutes. It's so important, and we must all still remain united on this front, because it is us versus them at this stage with affordability checks. And we've got to show them that, you know, we're not accepting this. And on whatever level it is at the moment, it's just completely unacceptable. And getting to that six figures is vital.
And I think it's worth emphasising that, you know, this is not some forlorn hope. I was at a conference about gambling regulation a couple of weeks ago, and there was a well-known anti-gambling or pro-gambling restrictions campaigner speaking there, and they acknowledged that racing's efforts to highlight the flaws in the proposed regulations, the flaws with affordability checks, had been hugely effective. Lucy Fraser, the culture minister, wrote a opinion article for the Racing Post last week in which she acknowledged the many concerns and pledged to racing and to bettors that the checks that they were bringing in would not harm the sport and would not be as intrusive as many fear. You know, there's clear signs that politicians are listening and that the efforts of racing and bettors to highlight these problems and the issues and objections to affordability checks are being listened to. So it really does highlight the importance of those who will be affected, whether they're bettors, racing fans, or work within the sport, of getting behind this petition and really emphasising to politicians in a language that, let's be honest, they really understand, that, you know, there are votes in this.
Yeah, we're at this point now with it where the foot's on the gas and it's almost a full throttle and we can't take our foot off the gas now. It's an issue that it's rare that it doesn't divide anyone on class or anything like that. We all, in this sphere, we're all bettors and we're all punters who, obviously, we have to look after people that have problem gambling and addictions. But we need to show that these measures are way too far and way too much of a blanket on ordinary punters, you know, maybe like you and I, maybe like my dad, my friends, all the way up to owners that want to have a good bet on their horse in a race, which they're perfectly entitled to do so. We've all got to stay as one in this and united and stick together and really, really go for it now. And we have the chance here, a real platform to make a difference for years to come in betting spheres.
Yeah, and I think it's worth emphasising as well that the damage to racing is not hypothetical. You know, I've been speaking to Nevin Truesdale, I've been speaking to Martin Cruddas, the big racecourse bosses. They are seeing in their figures a really significant decline in the revenues coming to racing from betting. And if this continues, if no steps are taken to address the current situation, or in fact the Gambling Commission roll out checks which are even more invasive and intrusive, the damage to racing will be profound. We're talking about less money available for prize money, and thus less money coming into the ecosystem. We're talking about owners who are deterred from having horses in the first place because they can't have a bet, being even more deterred by declining prize money. And you potentially end up in this cycle of decline that, you know, if racing doesn't act now, if racing is not able to positively influence the direction of this regulation, We are talking about something which will have a long-lasting and potentially, you know, catastrophic effect on the sport.
Exactly that. And from working on race courses and you're speaking to owners after a race, obviously there's the joy of the winner, but you do speak to them and they are all incredibly worried, and people do go, even if they're in syndicates, they go, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, if I'm not allowed to have a bet on my own horse. It seems like once every week on Twitter you go check and another owner's saying, I'm not going to be a part of this sport anymore because I've been restricted for having a bet. It just can't be that way. And he said it's like a massive sort of snowball at the minute. It's going to have a huge snowball effect if they don't go through as they are, going like a massive snowball turned into a boulder going down a ski slope. And it just wouldn't end at that. It is frightening to think about as an ordinary bettor. And for what it must be for other people, it's scary. And we must really, really keep up the momentum we've got now, especially with this petition, and we must get it to 100,000. So that's a nice call out to everyone, especially if you're watching it, if you haven't signed it yet, Sign the petition and get everyone you know who's within the sport, loves the sport, and also likes having a bet and wants to protect their rights to have a bet, sign the petition.
Yeah, well said, Matt. And we will put the details of how to sign the petition in the description. DJ, I can't let you go without checking in on the situation in Ireland, because obviously last time you were in, you painted a pretty gloomy picture about the progress of the regulation, the Gambling Regulation Act in Ireland. We also had Flutter's boss who was speaking about it, and he also used that phrase, spiral of decline, if there's some of the more draconian elements of the proposal came into force. Any updates on its passage and whether there's any chinks of light in terms of racing's concerns being listened to and addressed?
Yeah, you kind of hear contrasting views all the time, Tom. You know, one week it's kind of at that stage now where I don't think a lot has happened in the last kind of 2 or 3 weeks. I think it's at that stage now where it's kind of, it's probably the steps of the process. The next step is when we're going to actually learn an awful lot more, I think, and find out exactly what's going to be in this document. You do talk to different people and they kind of might say, oh, I heard a rumor that, you know, they might be changing a little bit and some of this kind of pressure that's coming from our side is getting through. And then another side of it, you hear, no, it's not for changing. No, definitely not. And it's obviously, it's hugely worrying. Look, it seems to be every time I come on this show, we speak about these issues and we worry for the future of the sport. But like, it's just the next couple of months from your point of view in Britain and from our point of view in Ireland, like, it's going to be absolutely crucial the next few months. And we just hope that the common sense approach will be used in both countries. And hopefully we do have a future in racing, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And it really can't be emphasised enough that if you love racing, if you're concerned about your race, you can do something about it. You can sign the petition. You can write to your local representative. It's important that your voice is heard. So I do encourage all of our watchers to make sure their thoughts and concerns are listened to. As ever, we will continue following that story as well as everything else we've discussed today. It falls to me to determine what goes onto our front page. And I think I'm going to go with the return of Henrietta Knight. Fantastic to have the trainer of Best Mate back in the sport. She will be a breath of fresh air, and it would be fantastic to see her once again toasting success at Cheltenham. So thank you very much to my guest, David Jennings. Do watch him on Upping the Ante back Tuesday at 6 p.m. And Matt Rennie in the studio. It's been good to have them. It's been good to have you as well. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again next week.